my guest in the second hour of today's program, Billy Strings. You're going to hear a lot about Billy Strings. He was the artist in residence this year at the Grey Fox Bluegrass Festival 2018, which meant he just kind of played with everybody all the time. He had his own sets, and I got a chance to talk to him in between sets, and you're going to learn a lot about Billy. Interesting, interesting young man. Kind of taking the world by storm. I think you're going to hear more about him as time goes on.
Really happy to welcome the Unreal Bluegrass, Billy Strings. How are you, Billy?
I'm doing great, man. Thank you for having me.
I'm thrilled. And, Billy, as I'm talking to you, we're sitting in the location of Grey Fox Bluegrass Festival, which is in upstate New York, and this is 2018. And there's several reasons I wanted to talk to you, not the least of which is Billy Strings is the official artist in residence of Grey Fox Bluegrass Festival.
Yeah.
That's pretty strong, man.
It's pretty crazy.
What does it mean to you? And I will tell the listeners, I've seen you before. A couple of years ago, you came here with another band or another, at least another player. Saw you on the main stage. And this year, I've seen you everywhere. Artist in Residence is a great title, but you have duties, and you're like popping up on everybody's set.
Yeah, so what that means is, I'm here all weekend long. I play a lot of music festivals all over the place, especially during the summer. And usually what that means is sometimes I play three festivals in a weekend. So all my friends are at the festival, and we get there Friday night, and we play our show. Guess what happens after the show? We got to leave and go drive a couple hours to a hotel somewhere. And all of our friends are sitting back there at that festival having a good time. And we're just going, oh, dang, we had to leave Telluride this year after playing our set. And it's like good to be in one spot for 4 days, one festival, all weekend long, and I'm sitting in with all, not all the bands, but a lot of the bands.
You got on stage with Jerry Douglas. He was doing a solo thing, and Jerry pulls you up.
Yeah, Jerry Douglas had me come play Purple Haze with him. And
for the audience, Billy's a guitar player supreme, deluxe.
Oh, well, thank
okay.
you.
So you've had a lot of fun. I imagine you're working pretty hard, but you're jumping up on stage with a lot of people here.
Yeah, it's awesome. Last night I got to play with the Wood Brothers, and I also got to play with Del McCurry Band. And I love both of those bands with all my heart. You know, Del McCurry Band is the best bluegrass band out there. I got to play with Cane Mill Road, which is
a great band,
some younger kids, which is like really good for me, too, because usually I'm the youngest one. I'm 25.
Yeah.
And, when I'm sitting in with Del McCurry Band and stuff. And
there's a lot of white hair, then there's you.
Yeah, I also sat in with Mark Lavingood yesterday, which was, he's my old friend from Michigan.
Big fan of Mark's.
Yeah. And we've been friends for a long time, and I really, we look up to one another, I think. We talk to each other about every once in a while I'll get a call from Mark and just shoot the bull, and he's just a great, great human. And I got to sit in with Peter Rowan on Thursday, and I sat in with
you. Look at you sitting in with all these famous people.
Peter Rowan and I, we had a mystical experience on stage together. He's sort of as a shaman.
Peter is a mystical experience.
He's a shaman. He took me into a different realm there during a song. I swear, we slipped out of time,
I know exactly what you're saying.
And I sat in with Lindsay Liu and Cane Mill Road and, Jerry Douglas. And then, I did a set with Brian Sutton, who is, my favorite guitarist around, in the flat picking guitar scene. Brian, he's my favorite, and he's a great guy, and we've, become friends. And we did a Doc Watson set with Joe Newberry, who's also just wonderful singer
guy.
And just great, great human.
Joe's a good friend.
And that was amazing, we played a lot of Doc Watson's music, which is what I grew up, that's what I cut my teeth on. My dad raised me on that stuff,
You got to see Doc, did you not?
I did. I got to see him only one time. It was 2010, and he had David Holt with him and T. Michael Coleman, Richard Watson, and I brought my mom and my dad down there. My dad raised me on Doc's music, but he never got to see him live, and I couldn't believe that. We worshiped Doc around my house. All we did is play Doc's music and play the records, and that's really the foundation of my childhood. That's the soundtrack to it, I just, one day when I was a teenager, I was thinking, what the heck? How come we've never seen Doc? And how come my dad never seen Doc and Merle? He was alive back then.
Yeah.
You know? Come on. And so I looked online and I found tickets to Newark, Ohio. It was the Hills of Home tour. And we drove 6 hours to go down there and see Doc. And me and my dad and mom sat there. And, I mean, we started crying. Within the first chorus of Way Downtown, we were all in tears
that
together.
That was a mystical experience.
See, that was a very... It was just unreal to see him really right there, you know.
Did you get to meet him?
Never got to meet Doc.
From his stage presence, Doc was all... Everybody knows this. He was not only a great singer, phenomenal guitar player, and historian, but he had the most relaxed stage presence I've ever seen. It was just like... It was his own time zone. His own timing was him. And Doc was in control of the stage. It was like no one I've ever seen before. It was Doc's time. He could talk, lead perfectly into the next song, end it when he wanted to, and everything just flowed.
Yeah, he was very comfortable.
Comfortable.
It seemed like.
That's,
you know,
great.
Especially when the band was really, you know, when I think, you know, right up there before Merle died, you know, they were tight. I think, you know, he must have been really happy with how the music was sounding and, very easy to go up there and do that, you know.
Yeah.
Especially just with his son and, you know, T. Michael's his right-hand man.
Yes.
And, yeah, I mean, I'd give anything to see one of them shows. I really would.
There's a lot of stuff available on YouTube. It's not the same as being in the presence
of. It's not the same. And, you know, I feel like I know Doc. I never got to meet him, but I love him so much. And I listen to him so much, and I try to learn. I'm still learning so much about Doc, and you know, I'm only 25, but I've been studying this guy my whole life, and I still haven't scratched the surface, you know, at all.
When you listen to Doc now after heaven, and I know musicians do this, you go back and re-listen and re-listen and re-listen.
Oh yeah,
you always pick up new and different subtle things from Doc.
Yeah, and it's, you know, you do pick up little things, but it's always kind of the same thing. In that it's just solid.
It's reinforcing.
It's sturdy as all hell. He plays the melody good and true. He sings it straight and true, and he just did his thing, and you know, nobody will ever touch him as far as I'm concerned.
When I see you jumping on and off stage throughout this festival, what guitar are you at?
Well, I got two of them with me. You know, one is a Thompson, Preston Thompson Brazilian dreadnought. With Adirondack spruce top, and the other one is a 1948 Martin D28.
That's what I saw you with when you jumped on with Mark.
Yeah.
I believe.
Yep, the Thompson, you know, they make those out in Sisters, Oregon. Preston Thompson and a small crew of builders, they build excellent guitars. I got two of them. I plan on getting a couple more. They're just excellent, you know, and it's a newer guitar. It's probably a year or two old, and it's just as open as the old Martin. And the 48, I acquired that guitar recently, actually, and I bought it from Brian Sutton. And he owned it for about 9 years and played it a lot, played it on some recordings, and it's the one with the two pick guards, kind of a famous axe among the bluegrass world. So sometimes, you know, people are like, holy smokes, is that Brian's guitar? I'm like, it used to be.
You need two pick guards.
Yeah, right.
And that leads me to this. Your friend, someone who I'm a fan of, Mark Lavingood, did an introduction to you about Michigan, you know, your connection with Mark, and they've always been listening, and I think he used the word thrasher as far as your guitar style, which I thought, I can ask you to explain this a little bit, but when people go see you, you're very dynamic. You're very dynamic into the guitar player. And I don't know how to describe it other than that, but when they see Billy Strings, they know they're hearing Billy Strings, which is good. It's a recognizable sound.
Well, thank you, man.
And thrasher's not a bad connotation. There's nothing to that at all.
It comes from, you know, I know what you're saying. And
in Mark's words, but
yeah.
I understand what he's
saying. Yeah, and a lot of people say the same thing.
Yeah.
You know? I headbang and sling my hair around and jump up and down. And, get, you know, to me... I'm performing. I'm not just playing music, you know. I'm engaging the audience. I'm engaged with the audience, you know, and I'm trying to just close that gap between us and them, you know, to get them into it as much as I can. Not to just go up there and play the song and just keep my head down and not look up at anybody. I want to look up at those people and say,
you want to pull them in?
Yeah. Are you digging this? You What's going on?
Yeah.
What can I do for you here?
Billy Strings is not stoic on stage. you're not going to be the old picture. You're not a photograph. You're a very active guitar player, and that you describe it well. What you're trying to do, and I say this too. I talk to artists about stage presentation, and it's an important thing. And you've already picked up on it is that if you're not communicating with the audience, one of the two of you might as well not be there.
Yeah.
It might as well be a record playing.
I hear you.
You know? So you do that really well. That's a very... I wanted to pull you into this. A very recognizable feature of what you do that you make the audience come in.
It wasn't intentional, and, you know, the way that my stage presence has evolved is not... I didn't set out for that.
Right.
What happened is I used to be in a metal band. When I was... 4, 5, 6 years old, I was learning how to play bluegrass music. I was learning how to play Doc Watson's music. I was learning how to play the music of Bill Monroe. And later on, I got an electric guitar, about 13 or 14. And then I learned about Black Sabbath and Jimi Hendrix and Led Zeppelin. And from there, it went to heavy metal, which was, you know, the reason I ended up in a heavy metal band, I think, is because I really wanted to play music with people that were my age. I played a lot of music, a lot of bluegrass music with a lot of older people, much older than me at the time. And it was just, man, I want to play some music with people that are my same age. Like, you know, I go skateboarding with my friends that are my same age.
Yeah.
Why don't I have a group of friends that I play music with, you know?
What heavy metal? You mentioned Black Sabbath, Jimi Hendrix, and I lost the other one already.
Well, I said
and
Zeppelin.
Then Zeppelin. Then you said that you got into heavy metal. What did that mean to you?
It went further, you know. And like I said, because I wanted to play with people that were my age, the only really music scene that was in Ionia, Michigan at that time was a metal scene, and I mean heavy metal. And so I joined this band, and I acquired a taste for this music. I hated it at first, couldn't stand it, but then I got used to it, and then I started to really like it, and now I love it. Well, I love metal,
and you should, because it has an element of this constant engagement, this constant. I don't mean to use big words about it, but you understand what I'm talking
about.
Yeah, it's if you go see a heavy metal concert, the audience is really engaged.
Oh,
in what's
yeah,
going on
and
there.
The band is, you know, when I was in that band, we thrashed all over the stage. We were headbanging, throwing our guitars, and I mean. Spitting and bleeding and crying and pushing each other. There was a mosh pit. It was insane. And that's how I learned how to perform. I didn't learn how to perform playing bluegrass. I learned how to play music in my living room. The first band I was ever in on stage in front of an audience was a metal band.
Well, you had to do some covers. So tell me who you were covering. When you were in your heavy metal thrash mosh pit, did you do any covers?
There was no covers.
Okay.
Yeah, right. We wrote all our own tunes back then, which is weird, you know. And honestly, I'm like, I mean...
It's okay, I just was curious.
Yeah, I don't know how to even say it, but like, I think we sort of sucked back then, but it was like, it was a high school band.
It was
like everybody's high school garage band. You
it sucks at some point.
You're a little bit embarrassed of, but I'm not embarrassed, that's not the right word. I'm actually very proud
That you went through it, that you did it, you experienced it.
It's like
you,
the garage band or something.
You got to do
you know?
That, man. You got to do that.
But that's how I learned how to perform. Like, I was never on stage very much playing bluegrass. I was around a campfire with my closest friends and my family. But I started going on stage in a metal band, and we headbanged and stuff. And then, you know, I got over it, and eventually I got my acoustic guitar back out. And then I dug deep back into Doc Watson, back into bluegrass. And then I was for real this time. I was really going to learn bluegrass for real. And when I started playing bluegrass on stage again, some of those heavy metal antics...
Showmanship.
They stuck.
Yeah.
So even though I'm playing bluegrass music, I sometimes still perform like I would if I was in the metal band because I can't help it.
Yeah.
It's just like when I get into the music, that's when I'm on stage, that's what I naturally start to do is to move around and to jump up and down and to, you know, and lately I've been trying to settle down a bit is to improve my technique
yeah.
with my hands yes. and on my guitar.
Yeah.
Because if I'm jumping up and down, headbanging and stuff, how am I using good technique?
Yeah.
But, you know, that's just...
But
just,
don't lose the energy.
Yeah, yeah. And it's just a... It's a happy medium of everything, you know, just to be aware of where your body is, where your body is in the space that you're in, whether, you know, in the theater or in a tent or outstage at a festival, or just to be aware if your feet are planted firmly on the ground and, you know, stay relaxed and breathe and all those things. It's very much a Zen, a kind of thing that I'm trying to achieve. People like Brian Sutton, people like Bela Fleck, they have that.
You're in that moment.
They're able to play at really high speeds and volumes and yet stay relaxed.
And intensity.
It's, man, I think of Brian and, you know, Bela Fleck and those guys like the ancient, like, samurai master, you know?
Yes, yes.
Brian's that guy with the big eyebrows on Kill Bill.
1 inch? Did you teach me how to punch with 1 inch?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Like, yeah, don't put your pick too far away. And, you know,
that's good.
I like that. Yeah.
The audience will have to figure out what we're talking about.
They'll figure it out.
You've got to go watch Kill Bill, both of them, just to get the sense of it. That's great. That's good because you've gone through all that experience and you bring it, and now you're at a level in bluegrass where you get to be artist in residence at Grey Fox, which is a huge feather for you.
A huge honor for me. Like I said, I'm trying to learn, you know, like, not be starstruck or not be, you know, last night before I stepped on stage with the Wood Brothers, my adrenaline just cranked in. I mean, I was sweating. I was nervous. And, you know, and same, not, I know Del McCurry Band a little bit more. They're close friends, so I don't get nervous to play with them. But, you know, these people are my heroes, and I really have looked up to them my whole life, and to be able to play music with them is, it's not only a big deal for me, it's unreal. I can't even believe that I'm here right now. But I can't say that, and I can't just, you know, because I have to go up there and play. And it's like, okay, forget about all that, man. Just go do it, you know, go play. And it's like, that's me.
And look at what you're learning from this.
Yeah.
Look at what you're taking away from this weekend's experience.
Yeah, it's, I mean, I've learned a lot, yeah. And I've had a great time, too. I'm awful tuckered out, I'll tell you that.
I want to say thanks so much for finding this time. I know you're really busy and you've been doing a lot. You probably spent a lot of late night hours, but I'm really thrilled that you and Allie found some time for me to chat with you for a few minutes about this experience.
Thank you. I'm glad to, you know, get on the pick piece.
Pick piece, brother.
Yeah,
that's
man.
It. Thanks, Billy Strings.
Thank you so much.
All right.